You know what the scariest thing is? To not know your place in this world. To not know why you're here. It's just an awful feeling.
Maestro, could you cue up that audio clip that I wanted to start the program out with today? I want the audience to hear something real quick.
I can cue it. All right. Just tell me when.
Now is the time, sir. All right, Maestro, what do you think that is?
Me in the lounge chair on Saturday afternoon.
Close. That is snoring. It sounds like a pack of wolves or bears.
Yeah, bears. Yeah.
But that was the sound that I heard a few weeks ago when I was at the Atlanta Zoo with my 10-year-old daughter in the fourth grade overnight trip to the Atlanta Zoo. They had 25 of us big bears stuck in a room about 1.5 times the size of what we're sitting in. And for those of you listening to the program, we are sitting in about a 12 by 12 room. So maybe a 24 by 12 little shack called Base Camp is where they put us. And there was 25 or 26 of us guys and kids sprawled out on the concrete floor in our sleeping bags with no room to walk. And there was no escape from what you're hearing. Snore, snore, snore. The scariest thing about that trip wasn't the snakes, the gorillas, the spiders. It was these animals I had to sleep with that night. Thank you very much, and welcome to Career Callings Radio with Robbie Romeiser. I'm your host, Robbie Romeiser at Career Callings. Our purpose is to help you avoid the financial and emotional pain of a bad career decision by helping you find, prepare for, and pursue the work God created you to do. We're glad you could join us today and hope you can join us by text, phone, or email at 864-381-7649, 864-381-7649, or email robbie@careercallings.net. That's R-O-B-B-I-E at careercallings.net. Now, the reason why I wanted to play the snoring there is that when I was at the zoo, something kind of dawned on me. On the program here, we've talked about something before that bears discussing, and that issue that I'm talking about that was triggered with some extra thoughts there at the zoo is this. Sometimes people just don't pursue God's calling for their lives, not because they don't understand what it is, but because they fear to do what God has clearly shown them to do. And they can't overcome that fear because they don't really trust Him, trust God, to provide for their needs. And that fundamental issue is really an issue of faith. And I want to share a thought with you that dawned on me while I was on that zoo trip with my daughter and her classmates that hopefully will give you some encouragement if you're struggling right now to have faith and trust in God. Hopefully this thought will be one of many that can give you some encouragement to obey the Lord's call in your life, to cast aside that fear that is preventing you from taking the next step that you know God wants you to take. While we were on that zoo trip, the tour instructor, who was actually quite a funny young man, we got along pretty well. During that conversation or during that tour, he constantly repeated a key message, and it pretty much went like this. Most of the endangered species on the planet are endangered because of humanity's destructive tendencies. Now, I'll be honest with you, I don't really disagree with that statement. I think it's pretty safe to say that's probably why most of them are struggling to survive. However, I did find it comical when this following thought entered my mind. Why should anybody who believes in evolution even give a care about these endangered species? Why would somebody who believes in evolution even care? So, you know, when I had that thought and I began to think about it more, it kind of went this direction. You know, the key to the theory of evolution is the idea of something called natural selection, also commonly referred to as survival of the fittest. And although there are many components to this idea, one of them is this: species that are better at adapting to their environment survive, and those who aren't good at adapting, you know, push up daisies. They're gone. They're done. All right? So they die out. So it follows, if humanity is the fittest, we ought to thrive, and any animals that can't keep up with us deserve to perish. Isn't that basically what evolution would say? Yeah, that's survival of the fittest in a nutshell. So a true believer in evolution would have to agree with that statement, at least in theory. But here's the kicker. In practice, most people, at least in America, whether they're evolutionists or creationists or whatnot, they agree that preserving creation, not destroying it, is the right thing to do. In other words, they act in total contradiction to their belief, understanding at a subconscious level that their belief cannot be practically applied to real life. So if you were to ask evolutionists why they desire to actually preserve endangered species rather than just let them die off, like the survival of the fittest would say that it should, they might give you any number of answers, none of which really would address the root issue. And this is the root issue. Anything that produces offspring that is similar to itself. What do I mean by that? Well, obviously, I think we would all agree that cats beget cats, not dolphins. Giraffes beget giraffes, not otters, okay? So it follows that if we were birthed into existence by some natural cosmic force that only favors the survival of the fittest, then this force would produce creatures who survive and thrive with no concern for those things which get in their way. But that's not what we got. We have instead tons of people who believe in evolution around the globe who don't just let things die out. They fight to preserve creation because they feel a moral duty to do so. And that's a huge contradiction because only moral processes can create moral creatures. Remember, the premise here is that things produce offspring that are similar to themselves. So only moral processes can produce creatures of morality. Someone with morality can only be birthed into existence by someone with morality. Evolution, natural selection, it's not moral. It's amoral. It has no morality. And therefore, it's incapable of producing moral beings like we are. But guess what? The God of the Bible is morally incarnate. Or is morality, I should say, incarnate. And that's what explains why so many people on the planet, whether they recognize God or not, have an insatiable desire to protect and preserve the creation that we see. And there are many verses in the Bible, by the way, that pertain to environmental stewardship, and I will link to those verses on careercallings.net/radio. So if you want to check out what those are, you can just go there and you can see what I'm talking about. But together, these verses in the Bible make it pretty clear that God put into mankind a conscience to preserve creation, a sense of duty that is perfectly in tune with our own Creator's nature. Now, there are certainly those that act in defiance of those duties. I mean, there are people that are pretty good at defying their consciences, okay? So, you know, that's why we have sin, right? But defying conscience is a learned skill. Naturally, we are quick to respect other life, not destroy it. And, you know, the only proof I need of that statement is the wonder in the eyes I saw of those kids, those fourth graders at the zoo. You know, I didn't see or hear any fourth graders say, "Ooh, a snake, let's go kill it. Let's break the glass and go kill it." No, they're like, "Ooh, ah, that's cool." They're respecting life. And we all start out that way, whether we're willing to acknowledge that or not. If evolution, if natural selection was our mom and dad, we would automatically want to kill everything that doesn't adapt to us, or that we would find rather less fit than ourselves to survive. My point is this. The zoo reminded me that those who deny God rarely, if ever, behave in a way that would be consistent with their evolutionary belief. The way they desire to preserve creation is just one example. Instead, they act in accordance with the world they live in. And that world was created by the God of the Bible, a world that is subject to His rules of order, his rules of morality, not evolution's disorder and amorality. People behave both rightly and wrongly the way the Bible predicts they will behave. Nature does too. Universe does too. The Christian faith is the only faith that perfectly matches up with the world we live in. And that truth ought to increase our faith in the one who created the world that we do live in. So here's my question. Here's my challenge to you if you're fearing to take that next step in the direction that God wants you to take with your career. If God's in control of the universe and people act in accordance with his rules, whether they acknowledge him or not, don't you think he's powerful enough and strong enough for us to trust him with our career choices and the next step we ought to take along the career path he has shown us to take? And if we don't know what path that is, shouldn't we take the time to figure it out what he wants us to do? Absolutely. I think so. And you and I need to take that next step in the direction we know we need to go, or you and I need to commit to doing the research to figure out what that next step is. Well, it is time for yet another edition of Stupid Business Decisions.
Operationalize our strategies. Invest in world-class technology and leverage our core competencies in order to holistically administrate.
Here is an example of a stupid business decision from an article called 10 Pretty Stupid Business Moves found on listverse.com, and I will definitely link to this article on careercallings.net/radio. With yet another last place finish staring them in the face, the Cleveland Indians promotions department decided to hold 10-cent beer night on June 4th, 1974 against the Texas Rangers. Heated play, 25,000 drunks, and essentially free beer with no consumption limit. Attendance was through the roof. Some arrived intoxicated, and the fireworks that went off at multiple locations in the stadium should have had been an early warning that things were going to get bad. Early in the game, one woman ran on field and flashed, I'm not going to say on the air, followed by a naked man running to second base after a home run. A father and son later ran onto the field, dual mooning the audience while outfielders were continuously pelted with empty bottles. When a Rangers player was spiked and the offending Indian ejected, the plastered audience started throwing everything onto the field that wasn't bolted down. Then, with the score tied, a drunken Cleveland fan ran onto the field, flipped the cap of Rangers outfielder Jeff Burrows' head. Burrows tripped trying to retrieve it, and Rangers manager Billy Martin charged the field to protect his player, followed by an entire Rangers bench. A full-blown riot ensued, with Cleveland fans running onto the field armed with knives, chains, and loosened seats. The Cleveland manager even ordered his team onto the field, bats in hand, to protect the visiting team. The head umpire eventually declared the game a forfeit in favor of the Rangers because order could not be restored. And Maestro, I just have one question for you. Would a 10-cent marijuana night at the Colorado Rockies game be a little bit less hectic than 10-cent beer night?
Maybe a little.
Just a little bit. Thank you. Let's hear Weird Al. We're going to have just as much fun on the other side of the break. Come on back.
I think I would rather have the guy seeking treatment without fear, theoretically.
Except now you find out that Andres Lubitz was seeking treatment, knew he was mentally ill. His doctor knew he was mentally ill. The only people that didn't know he was mentally ill was the pilot he was sitting next to and the 149 people in back that he was just about to murder. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
Weeknights at 6 on Christian Talk 660 at 92.9.
I heard a famous author say once that no matter how fantastic your book is, it will never be a best-selling book until you promote, promote, promote. The same is true with whatever you're trying to sell, whether it's a product for work, a fundraiser for your school, or a nonprofit's message to the world. Great signage is the foundation of any marketing effort, and no one is better at providing you with great signage than my friends at Signforce. Joey Harrison and his staff are a one-stop shop for all of your marketing needs. Handcrafted signs, vehicle wraps, screen printing, embroidering, business cards and brochures, there's nothing the folks at Signforce can't do. I've personally used Signforce for signage for my business and for our church, and Signforce has beautifully wrapped two buses for our Christian school. If you need to promote anything, Signforce will deliver a great product at a great price and with great speed. Give Joey and his folks a call at 864-582-3600 or check out their website at signforcesc.com. That's 864-582-3600, signforcesc.com.
Hey, yo, every pizza chain claims to have the best pizza with the freshest ingredients. But Torelli's Pizza in the University Square Shopping Center, they've got the best pizza with the freshest ingredients. And they're locally owned. Check out their reviews on Yelp. A native New Yorker says, right texture and taste. Amount of sauce and cheese, perfect. So, next time you're looking for a yummy New York-style pizza, you need to go to Torelli's Pizza. Visit torellispizza.com for their daily specials.
Career mismatches cause people financial and emotional pain as they struggle to pay their bills and also to find meaning in their lives. The late Larry Burkett recognized this, and for nearly 30 years, Crown Ministries has helped hundreds of thousands of people around the world find, prepare for, and pursue the purpose-filled work God has called them to do. To learn more about how you or someone you love can use biblical wisdom to avoid the financial and emotional pain of a bad career decision, visit careercallings.net/discover, careercallings.net/discover.
Listening to this radio station could change your life. Thanks for giving us a try. We're Christian Talk 660.
But our lives aren't just measured in years. They're measured in the lives of people we touch around us.
This feels like my calling and my purpose in life. There's something different about this journey that's more heart connected.
Purpose is more than just your core of your own self. It's beyond your own identity. Everybody ultimately wants to serve other people.
You can have everything in life you want. You'll just help enough other people get what they want.
And that little bit of sadness in the mornings you spoke of, perhaps you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing.
With us before the break, you have got to go to careercallings.net/radio, download the free podcast of today's show, and listen to today's edition of Stupid Business Decisions. We talked about the 10-cent beer night that occurred at the Cleveland Indians baseball game on June 4th, 1974, and it was quite instructive, Maestro, don't you think, on things you should not do at a baseball game or any sporting event, for that matter.
Or anywhere.
Anywhere at all.
10-cent beer night does not work anywhere I can think of.
No, definitely not. But I do believe it would be a lot more mellow for 10-cent joint night at a Colorado Rockies game, since marijuana is legal in the state of Colorado. And at this point, listeners are wondering, what are we hearing on a Christian radio station? Joints and beer. That's not, no, don't worry. We're not partaking of either, nor do we advocate the partaking of either on the Career Callings radio show. I am your host, Robbie Romeiser. And yes, we will not talk about legal or illegal substances for the remainder of the show. We will talk about careers. And feel free to join us today with your thoughts, questions, comments at 864-381-7649. 864-381-7649 or Robbie at careercallings.net, R-O-B-B-I-E at careercallings.net. I received an email recently from a young man whom I will call Larry, just to preserve his anonymity. And in the email, he described himself as monetarily successful, blessed with a wonderful wife and son, and happily involved in his local church. And then he posed this question. Every day I wake up knowing that I'm not the success I wish I was, and I don't feel secure about my future. I don't love my job. I'm not blazing a trail that I can look back on and be proud of, and I've asked everyone I can think of for help, but no one can help me. I figured I'd try you. So, Larry, let me see if I can help you out today with some thoughts from the Word of God. The best way I know how to help with a question like that, and that's a very real question that a lot of people struggle with, by the way, is this. Ask yourself this question. Who are you really working for? Yourself or God? Are your business ventures aimed at making money, or are they aimed at glorifying God, knowing that money is just the byproduct, not the driving motivation of a worthwhile effort in the Lord's service? And to kind of give you some biblical background as to why I'm asking that question, Psalm 39, verses 4 through 5, teaches, first of all, that life is very short. And this is what these two verses say. Lord, make me to know mine end and the measure of my days, what it is, that I may know how frail I am. Behold, thou hast made my days as a handbreadth, and mine age is as nothing before thee. Verily, every man at his best state is altogether vanity. And in the following two verses after that in Psalm 39, those would be verses 6 and 7, teach us that anxiety comes our way when we make the focus of our short life the heaping up of riches rather than service to God and to our fellow man. And this is what verses 6 and 7 say from Psalm 39. Surely every man walketh in a vain show. Surely they're disquieted, which means anxious. Surely they're disquieted or anxious and vain. He heapeth up riches and knoweth not who shall gather them. And now, Lord, what wait I for? My hope is in thee. So the reason the anxiety is there, Larry, is because on a subconscious level, whether we realize it or not, that, you know, we realize the futility of ignoring God's purposes so that we can pursue our own. When we switch the focus of our attention from serving our temporary lusts to serving God's eternal goals, we experience that peace that passes all understanding because we're doing what Jesus told us to do. You know, Matthew 6, 24 through 34, seek God's kingdom first and he'll provide all our needs. Matthew 6, 19 through 20 says, our focus should be to lay up treasures in heaven. And by making this switch in focus from our earthly lust to heavenly prizes, we shed the burdensome yoke of worldly expectations, whether those expectations be someone else's for our lives or whether those expectations be our own self-imposed expectations. We'll shed that burdensome yoke of worldly expectations and exchange them for the easy yoke that Jesus promised in Matthew 11, 28 through 30. Didn't he say, take my yoke upon me, for my burden is easy, and my yoke is easy, rather, and my burden is light? That's exactly what he said in Matthew 11, 28 through 30. Simply put, the Creator wired us to enjoy inner peace only when we live in harmony with his way of living. And anytime we do things our way, we put our expectations in front of his, we put other people's expectations in front of his, we don't enjoy the harmony with God we are designed to seek. And as a result, we suffer anxiety as a result. So Larry, I would say the reason the anxiety is there is probably, and I could be wrong, but probably rooted in the fact that right now your business ventures are designed to achieve the American dream rather than necessarily being designed to achieve God's dream for you. And if I'm wrong, I apologize, but just based on what I read in the email, that's what I think. Also, Larry mentioned in his email about wealth and such, and I just wanted to make this point. There is nothing inherently wrong with wealth. I mean, Deuteronomy 8:18 is one of several verses in the Bible that teaches that God gives wealth. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with being wealthy if God gave it to you. There's also nothing inherently wrong with having goals to strive for. I mean, Proverbs 16:9 teaches that man makes goals, man devises his way, but God directs his steps. God will be the guide of making sure that the right goals are actually obtained. So there's nothing wrong with setting goals. Just make sure that you strive after the things that you strive after for God's glory. 1 Corinthians 10:31. Whether you eat or drink or whatsoever you do, do all for God's glory and not for your own. James 4:1-6 talks about how there's strife in the church because everybody's trying to pursue their own lusts. So make sure what you're doing is for God's glory, not for your own. And if you do, God's going to supply you with the contentment and the peace that you seek. Now, another thing that Larry mentioned in his email was this, and quote, "I don't feel secure about my future," end quote. And Larry, I just want to let you know that I have learned that security is an absolute myth, just as much a myth as Greek mythology and all the other stuff that we would call mythology. There's no such thing as security. I mean, at any moment, your world can be pulled out from under you. It's just a fact. Just ask some of the people that were super rich in 2008, and by 2010, they'd lost everything due to the economic downturn. So it doesn't matter how much you plan or how much you prepare, at any time, your world can be yanked out from under you. But what is much more real than the false sense of security we're taught by our culture to seek after are the truths that we find in Proverbs 21:31 and Romans 8:28. Proverbs 21:31 says that the horse is prepared for the day of battle, but safety is of the Lord. So at the end of the day, no matter how much we prepare, safety is in God's hands. And there's not anything we can do to prevent that or change that. Also, even if we do go through tough times, we need to have faith in Romans 8:28, the fact that God will use everything for our good and for His glory. And that process of going through tough times will mold us more into the image of a son. What does James 1:3 say? The trial of your faith worketh patience. And Jesus Christ was the most patient being that ever walked the earth. So we have to have faith that God will use all things, whether good or bad, that come into our lives to make us more like Himself. And as a child of God, being like Christ is our one ultimate overriding goal and the biggest expectation we should have in our lives. Now, just to be clear, the Lord certainly does not prohibit us from preparing for the future. I mean, He's not an advocate of laziness or slothfulness. There's nothing wrong with being diligent, nothing wrong with preparing. I mean, remember the first half of the verse I just quoted, Proverbs 21:31, says the horse is prepared for the day of battle. So we do have a duty to prepare. We just need to understand that the safety part of it isn't a result of our preparation. It's a result of God's provision of that that safety. There's that duty to prepare. But the truth behind the safety part is also illustrated in Psalm 108:12-13, which says this, and King David penned this, these two verses here. Give us help from trouble, for vain is the help of man. Through God we shall do valiantly, for He it is that shall tread down our enemies. And the point is this, no matter how much you prepare, safety is ultimately of the Lord. As long as we trust in our strength, we'll never be free from anxiety. If, however, we place our complete trust in God and place our trust in whom it belongs, anxiety will be minimal in our lives. I won't say it'll be completely gone, but it will certainly be minimized or mitigated, and God's inner peace will saturate us. And Larry, I hope that helps you out today as you struggle through those things there. Well, I encourage you, if you have a question like Larry, something like his or something totally different from his related to your career calling or your struggles trying to get some sort of inner peace regarding what you're dealing with today, then please feel free to give me a call or shoot me an email. My phone number, 864-381-7649, 864-381-7649, or by email at robbie@careercallings.net. That's R-O-B-B-I-E. At careercallings.net. Well, I want to thank you again for joining today's show. If you'd like to get a copy of this show, feel free to visit careercallings.net/radio to download a free podcast of today's program, also to get links to the articles I've referenced in today's program. Mark Twain said the two most important days in your life are the day you're born and the day you find out why. You don't know why God designed you, what kind of value He gave you to bring to the world. It's time to start looking. God bless you.